Hello, hello. My name is Orestes Hernandez. I'm the executive director of the brand new National Mascot Hall of Fame, and we are in Whiting, Indiana.
And how did you end up in Whiting?
You know, it's kind of a long story.
Yeah.
I got this email in August of 2018, and the subject said MHOF, and I thought it was spam. And I didn't reply, and they emailed me again a few days later, and I read it, and they said something about looking for somebody to fill a position, MHOF. I don't know what it was, so yeah, sure, here's my number. And lo and behold, it was a call for filling the executive director position at the Mascot Hall of Fame, and I said, the what Hall of Fame? And you know, I just never had thought of that being a thing. And we got more into it, and then I had to look up where Whiting, Indiana was.
You were in Miami.
My entire life I've been in Florida. The northernmost I've ever lived is this past year. My wife and I bought a home in a town called Stewart, which is just north of West Palm Beach on the East Coast. Two blocks from the Intercoastal, beautiful, you know, bought it in March of last year, and now I'm in Indiana. Now we're Hoosiers.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not sure what that means, but I'll figure it out soon enough.
So we'll get to the, I mean, it's got to be a fun place to work. How long have you been here in this office?
So we got here, we rolled up early November, my first day November 12th, 2018, and you know, at that point, we've got a couple of people already on staff that are already here that I inherited, right? And we're on the tail end of construction and installing exhibits and all the features within the building and all the mascot heads that you came and saw this, you know, when you walked in. And really, my role, I realized that, yeah, I'm the new executive director, but really, this is a construction job, you know, logistics and project management. And truly, I just didn't want to be in the way. I wanted to suck everything in, be a sponge, and learn as much as I could, as fast as I could. And I was an extra pair of hands, so put me to work. Like, where do you need, you know, where do we need support that I can cover, not knowing as much as I really should know at the time. And it worked out well, and I inherited, I got lucky. I inherited a very, very good team, self-directed. They know what has to be done. They know how it has to be done and when it's got to be done. And then we built a team around them to run the facility, and we've been at it for a little over 2 months.
And it's got to be, I'm saying, it's got to be a fun place to work every day. I mean, you walk I walked in, I was a little tired going through all the traffic wasn't that bad. And I come in and see, every day you walk by all those mascots. There's Mr. Met.
Yep.
A nice version of Mr. Met.
I'm a Marlins guy, yeah, so, right. You know, he's not my favorite.
Yeah.
But I have to be impartial, you know, in this job.
So there's all these mascots right at the front door. I mean,
that's right.
Mascot statues.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and so that's our take. Yeah. When you think about, we're changing perceptions when people walk in here because they might think of, they'll perceive what they think we are, you know, Mascot Hall of Fame, but we're also a children's interactive museum. And so people will perceive whatever they perceive. But we're changing those perceptions as soon as people walk in the door, which is really cool. You know, I joke with people that we have to hire extra janitorial people. And they say, well, why? It's so clean. Well, because we have so many jaws that hit the floor when people walk in because they're looking straight up.
Yeah.
At our take at the Hall of Fame bronze bust.
Yeah.
You know, you think of bronze busts and statues and our take on that is 6 foot diameter inflatable mascot heads in the atrium. So, you know, it's fun, lots of colors, kids love it. You know, it's every day there's a wow and a ooh and a, you know, and it's been fun every day.
When did it open?
So we did a soft opening on December 26th,
mm-hmm.
day after Christmas. Excuse me. And so we've been at it for about, you know, a little over 2 months, getting the kinks out of the building, and there's a lot of technology embedded in all the exhibits. So technology, you know, you get the kinks out after heavy use, and we had one exhibit that everyone likes to call the Mr. Potato Head, life size of mascots, putting mascot pieces together, and one of That was one exhibit that was maybe conceptualized in a way that wasn't true to what kids are. Kids are, they don't know limits of anything. They'll throw things and drop things and because they don't know. And so we realized that they had been done in a material that wasn't suitable for heavy kid use. You know, within the first 2 days, there were cracks showing and, you know, so we've got that being flipped out into some new space age material that's bouncing, you know, off the floor when it drops. So you know, we're getting the kinks out of the building. And
it's like your spring training before
pretty much, season. Pretty much. Like and baseball season starts for us with our grand opening weekend, the first weekend of April.
Oh, your grand. So you are going to have a grand opening.
Yeah, 5, 6, 7. Yep, all absolutely.
Right. So what's going to happen there? Are you there know, any mascots that are going to
mascots
visit?
Galore. So we're the Mascot Hall of Fame, and so we really want to highlight the Hall of Fame mascots, right? But there are thousands of mascots. When you think of high school level, collegiate, obviously, professional, corporate, all sorts. And so that grand opening weekend, we've titled it. That Friday and Sunday, we're going to have local non-Hall of Fame mascots on hand for photo opportunities, meet and greets, autograph sessions, you know, activities here
from the area,
Northwest Indiana, Chicago, yeah. Lane. Yeah, sure. And Saturday,
will Clark the Cub be here?
We hope. We hope he may.
He's allowed in, even though he doesn't have pants.
I mean, we weren't going to point that out. You know, we should bleep that out of this. We bleep it out. You know, there's quite a few mascots that don't have pants.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, we'll put them all in a lineup.
Okay.
And so that Saturday, we'll only invite Hall of Fame, you know, inducted mascots to participate and showcase their talents and why they're Hall of Famers. And then we'll unveil that day. We'll do something special for our members, you know, members reception upstairs. And we'll unveil the logo we've come up with for the inaugural induction ceremony this June. So that'll be a neat day, and we'll get some media coverage. And
when's the induction ceremony?
Induction is set for June 14, 15, 16. That's Father's Day weekend.
Oh, right.
I think it's also U.S. Open weekend, I think.
Right.
And that's okay. So we'll be out here, and that'll be, again, mascots galore, and Reggie, who is the Mascot Hall of Fame's mascot, he'll be hosting all the Hall of Fame mascots to induct the newest four inductees. So,
okay, now that I've got my questions here, but I'll follow the flow of the conversation.
Sure.
How do mascots get inducted? What's the criteria?
You know, so that's being redeveloped.
Okay.
So we're now, so the Hall of Fame of mascots has lived in an online format for about a decade, a little over
right.
a decade.
Guy from the Philly Fanatic.
That's right. Dave Raymond, the original Philly Fanatic, came up with that concept to showcase the importance of mascots in our culture, in our communities, certainly for the franchises they represent. And so, but it's only lived online until this facility was built this past year. So, you know, how do they get inducted? We're tweaking that because now we're a facility. We're going to have an executive committee that will work on the nomination process. And truly, it's a tall order because we've got one person on the committee has developed over time a database of mascots, and so there's 1,200 mascots on that database, and we surely don't have them all. So. You know, as I envision the role of the Mascot Hall of Fame as the repository for everything mascot related, not just in North America, but, you know, South America, the world, because the phenomenon is global. It's heavy, prevalent in Japan, in Europe, the UK. And you'll see Moonchester from Manchester City upstairs as you walk around. And on the tail end, we're uninstalling them here soon. You know, that's probably something we're going to, you know, get into, but we surely don't have them all.
Yeah.
And we'd like to make sure that we fill out that database completely.
Do you look at things like their role in the community? Do you look at how clever the costumes are? I mean, I do like Mr. Met. That is pretty iconic with the baseball.
And he's been around since I believe the 50s.
Yeah. Do you look at longevity?
So longevity is certainly a factor, but I think at a minimum. So at a minimum, a league and a mascot has to have been around for 10 years.
Okay.
I think that's a minimum basis, and that's really for startup leagues like the New American Alliance football league. So you know they have mascots, but we want to make sure, one, that the league is around for a while, right? Sustainable. And that their mascots are really, not them, but mascots in general, are ingrained in their community, building their community on the education front, on the outreach front, kids programs. What are they doing, right? Are they just showing up to appearances and doing a skit and leaving? Or are they developing programs to go to schools and go to hospitals and really taking care of the people in our community? And on the flip of that coin is iconic performances. Like, how are they viewed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I come from a baseball background in the front office of the Marlins for 13 years. So my brain is always thinking stats. How can we maybe bring a radical change to how mascots are thought about? You know, how many t-shirts has a mascot tossed in a year? How many high fives to a kid? Mm-hmm. How many hospital visits? How many something quantifiable? You know, when you're like at bats or home runs, you know, those are great things, but you know, they do great things too, and we've got to be able to find some way to quantify it. As one degree, the other degree is performances and their social media outreach, and the third degree is their programs and their outreach in the community and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of things that go into it.
Was there a mascot? Did you consult any mascots as this came together? I'm sure the Philly Fanatic. I mean, a mascot advisory board.
Yeah, sure. So Dave is at a very big part of the development of the Mascot Hall of Fame, and how the exhibits work and how they are themed into the mascot theme and so forth. But we also were, you know, had heavy input by a couple of local, semi-local educational institutions to help us develop, you know, STEAM level curriculums that are embedded in all the exhibits. So while kids are having fun playing the exhibits and playing the games, they're learning things that are based on science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and the arts, and maybe not even realizing it. And really, the exhibits are there, you know, obviously they're focused on the K-8, you know, grade level, but grown adults are getting the giggles and playing the games because it's okay to be a kid.
Yeah, it
right?
sure is. Yeah.
And it's okay that, you know, other adults are laughing because they're not laughing at you, they're laughing with you.
Yeah, right.
You know, sort of thing. So it's a good place to let adults kind of let their guard down and have a little fun. It's okay.
So, I mean, everybody would want to know why Whiting and not Philadelphia,
sure.
and not Miami.
Sure.
Why Whiting?
You know, Dave Raymond had created this online platform to honor mascots and the great work they do. And the city of Whiting was looking for something to bring to the community. They have a great beachfront that brings in thousands upon thousands over the summer months, but then there's a lull mm-hmm. the other months. And so several years ago, 6, 7, 8 years ago, there was talk about what can we do? What can we bring to supplement that for the entire year? And really, as a tourism program to bring in foot traffic for all the merchants, you know, restaurants and shops and so forth. And so the initial thought was a civic museum, city history museum. BP is a big partner of the city, you know, big stakeholder.
Right, I went right by BP.
Right, big stakeholder, you know, and so maybe a BP type museum, corporate museum. There was talk about a baseball, Chicago Baseball Hall of Fame museum, sort of thing.
I do remember that.
And then you know, one of the people that was kind of behind the scenes helping figure this all out came upon the mascothalloffame.com website, decided to reach out to Dave. They put Dave in touch with Mayor Joe Stahura here at Whiting, and just to have a conversation. And Dave, in that first conversation, said, "Whiting? What's Whiting? And where's Whiting? And why Whiting?"
Yeah.
And so they convince him to come and have a conversation, come check out the town. And, you know, truly, you mentioned earlier, Pierogi Fest and all these quirky things was a perfect fit for the quirkiness and silliness of mascots. And it was a match made in heaven. And here we are.
Is there a Pierogi mascot?
Mr. Pierogi is indeed a mascot, and he would be offended at that tone of your question. You know, I just had lunch with him a couple weeks ago.
What'd you eat?
I had Italian. That'd be odd to have a pierogi in front of Mr. Pierogi. No, I'll tell you what, great guy, and I think he's been playing. I think he's been playing the part of Mr. Pierogi for over a decade. So, you know, he's kind of ingrained in that role here in the community, and you know, people have fun with it.
So some stats. It was a 5-year project to get this up?
I believe so.
$18 million?
That's about right.
25,000 square feet?
That's correct.
How many levels?
Three levels. Yep.
And
truly a three-level atrium that houses, you know, the most gigantic mascot inflatable heads you've ever seen.
Okay. So some of my notes. Benny the Bull and Tommy Hawk.
That's right.
2017 inductees.
Were they elected.
Oh, they were elected.
Alongside Nittany Lion from Penn State.
Okay.
And Slugger, and that's 2 G's and 3 R's from the Kansas City Royals. So those four were nominated and elected in 2017. And they held off on inducting until 2019, until this building was complete.
Oh, so...
So they are our four inductees this year.
Oh, so yeah, who's going to come then? So will Benny the Bull and Tommy Hawk be here?
That's right. They're all coming.
They're all coming. How many people are coming?
They better come because they're being inducted.
Yeah. Okay. So who all is being inducted then? Do I have that list?
There you go. That's your four. Benny the Bull, Tommy Hawk, Slugger, Kansas City Royals, and Nittany Lion from Penn State University.
Okay. Yeah. Some of the first class was the Suns Gorilla.
So the initial class of Mascot Hall of Famers, it's a class of three: the Philly Fanatic, the Gorilla from Phoenix Suns, and then the Famous Chicken. You can't have a Hall of Fame of mascots without the Famous Chicken.
Now, is his stuff here? I've been reading.
So he's represented here in a very limited fashion. I've connected with him on a TED. And I've connected with him by email on a couple of occasions just to invite him. You know, listen, we want you to be a part of this. You know, truly, a Hall of Fame mascot isn't a true Hall of Fame without his presence. And we like to make sure that we honor that career, you know. And he's been very gracious. He's also been enshrined at the Baseball Hall of Fame and a couple other Hall of Fames. And he's, you know, he's been very great about saying, listen, I want to make sure that the other mascots have their due, and you know, and it's okay.
It makes me think. This wasn't on my list of questions, but I don't know how wonky I get. I want to get in the mascot world, but I do remember the Famous Chicken back in the early days of Wrigley Field.
Everyone remembers.
You wouldn't see this today. I remember sitting in the bleachers at Wrigley Field. He'd come out of the scoreboard, and he'd come and sit with us in the bleachers.
Yeah.
I mean, how many mascots are like that interactive, I wonder? I mean, I know Benny wanders up and down the stands and throws popcorns on people.
I tell you what, I think you'd be surprised.
Yeah?
I think that's happening across the board, and I think you're seeing that more and more. I think franchises and universities are starting to realize the power of their mascot. The importance of brand building that the mascot does for their franchise or university or whatever, you know, corporate mascots. So Michelin Man, you know, Jeffrey the Giraffe from Toys R Us, Kool-Aid Guy, you know, all these iconic, Geico Gecko, all these iconic corporate mascots, you know, and they're an important piece of that brand, right? And that's the same thing when you talk about sports, you know, athletic-related mascots. And, I'll tell you what, it's a lot of fun.
Would you get into corporate mascots here, or is this just sports-related?
This is just sports-related in North America. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably a little bit of time before we branch out internationally, but I think that's probably on the path. you know, where we want to go at some point. And I think there's certainly opportunity to highlight corporate mascots, you know, probably on a limited basis. I don't know that we want to get into the corporate mascot Hall of Fame sort of thing. Maybe not. I don't want to limit myself, but that's not really on the radar yet. But certainly, if we got into a place where we can get, you know, some sort of partnership to highlight the importance of that mascot, it's the same concept, different conversation, but the same idea.
You know, I could sit here and talk about mascots all day.
Me too.
Only a couple more questions. Yeah, I'm trying to have fun with this. What about when mascots misbehave? Like Mr. Met, he got into trouble a couple summers ago.
That wasn't a pretty scene. And I think franchises are getting better at how they react.
Yeah.
But at the same time, so, you know, when you talk about that, you know, Tommy Hawk got into a scuffle with a fan.
I do remember that was
a couple of months ago, in December, I think. Yeah. And, you know, and you see part of a video that hits social media, and social media is so, you know, you got to make sure that you understand the whole story because it was only a clip that was shown, and really the guy was defending himself. So, and the team, you know, took their time to make sure they had all the facts, and they backed their employee and they backed Tommy Hawk, and I agree with that. You know, I think a situation like that is part of the education we'll have to provide at a national level, a national conversation about the importance of mascots and what they're here for and what they're about. But at the end of the day, there are people in that costume, in that outfit, you know, doing a job, right? And not just anybody can do the job. You've got to be trained. You've got to know how to do it safely. You've got to know how to interact with people in a correct way. You know, I think mascots want to be careful, certainly when they're early on in their career, mascotting, how you hug kids, so those kind of things. It's important, but not just that, but the health and wellness. I spent 13 years at the Marlins, and I had one opportunity to get into Billy the Marlin's dad's costume. And that really was...
Did he have a dad? I didn't know he had a dad.
Well, that was the original Billy the Marlin from 93. And so they had created a brand new outfit, and that just became the one they used for dad. And they had a Billy's mom. And so I got to be dad for the chicken dance on the field on some Sunday afternoon in the seventh inning in the Florida heat. And so you know, 5 minutes, and you're sweating bullets. You know, the heat. So the health and wellness part, the heat stroke, knowing when you got to get out, knowing to stay hydrated. You know, there's a lot of things that go into it that I think it's on us moving forward to make sure that we educate the layman fan, the layman sports fan, on not just the importance of mascots and what they do for the community and their franchise, but, you know, the hard work that goes into it.
I love the ambiance.
Long-winded question.
What train is that? You know, is that the South Shore? Or that was a freight train, probably. But yeah.
Listen, one train is like any other train. I'm from Florida, and they have trains. You know, there are trains in Florida. You know, the Henry Flagler Railroad. And all
yeah,
that.
Right.
But I truly haven't been this close to trains until now. But you know what? We actually on the second and third floor. We have kind of a spot, and the building is surrounded by windows, so you've got a great view of everything that surrounds us.
Uh-huh.
And we've got people that love trains that will come with their cameras and go up to that spot.
Oh, really?
And just train watch.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I didn't believe it at first either.
I have a friend who doesn't.
And then I walked somebody in, and they knew there was a train coming. They knew the time. It was going to be here in 7 minutes. I got to get up there. And I was like, oh, okay. And I walked him up, and sure enough, 7 minutes, and he got the shot. So.
A couple more questions, I'll let you get back to work. I told you on the phone about the Billy Marlin story. I have my book here I did on Monday.
Yeah.
So it was the year, I'll leave this book with you.
That was before my time at the Marlins.
Yeah, so it was opening day, and the point of this story is to get to the kids.
Yeah.
It was opening day, and it was the year the Cubs lost their first 14 games, and a buddy and I went down to Miami.
Well, I don't know what year that was.
Yeah.
What year was that?
It might be in here, but it was a historic way to start the season. It was really, really bad. And anyway, so Billy came out and parachuted out of a plane.
Yeah.
He lost his head.
Yeah.
His head fell off.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't find his head for, I think they found it at the end of the season in some swamp somewhere. But, you know, they talked.
Well, not the swamp, probably the Everglades.
Yeah, the Everglades. I don't know, I'm trying to find. Anyway, here's Mr. Shucks, I mentioned. Have you seen Mr. Shucks yet?
No.
Oh, he's great. He's kind of like a Cedar Rapids version of Mr. It's the Cedar Rapids Colonels, Mr. Shucks.
That's who he represents?
Yeah,
Cedar,
yeah. And he's got kind of a baseball. Yeah.
That's funny.
Oh, here. So it was 1997. I flew to Miami for the Cubs season opener against the Marlins.
Well, that's the year they won their first World Series.
Yeah. But anyway, the event was first downplayed in the South Florida media so small children wouldn't worry about Billy's head.
That's right.
I mean, so how do the kids respond? That's the point. I mean, kids really take these mascots seriously.
They do. Yeah. And we, you know, what's funny is that's so apropos. We had a 3-year-old here maybe a week or 2 weeks ago. And as you, after when we're done talking, you're going to walk through the facility and check out the exhibits. I want you to especially take a look at the marvelous mascot maker, right? Mm-hmm. And so this exhibit teaches kids and adults alike on how mascots are created, the actual outfits, the costumes. And there's this nice video about the studios that produce them and how they use materials to do the different things. And so it's interactive. So the video finishes. All right, there's an arrow. Pull that lever. And the thing starts moving. And it's like Frankenstein, right? So you're all these parts. White fur goes up. And then we paint it purple. And then, you know, purple puffs of fur go over here. And then there's a part on a rail that, you know, spins and showcases mascot parts that aren't together. An arm and a torso and a hat and a head. And this kid saw that and freaked out. And he didn't, no, I don't want to see. And he just, you know, bawling. And his parents took him out.
Yeah.
Because he had seen Reggie, you know, in the mascot earlier in the day during his visit. And so, you know, that in 2 months, that's the first time that's happened.
Do you have kids?
I don't.
Okay, neither do I.
I don't. Nieces and nephews and really whenever
kids,
my wife says.
I've got a thing in here, Ozzie the Cougar, that's the King County.
Yeah.
You know, and I've talked to him over the years. Yeah. I think they probably had a couple of cougars, but and then kids like to torment them, you know? I mean, you know, sometimes kids
pull feathers.
Being a mascot, serious work.
It's serious work, and that's why they never travel. They never try to travel alone. When they're in the stands, when they're walking through the concourse, when they're at an event, there's always somebody next to them, behind them, as a lookout, as a support. And actually, recently I heard a story about Mickey Mouse and how they deal with Mickey Mouse. And so they've got a support system around Mickey Mouse when he makes an appearance. And the thing about Mickey Mouse that Disney has created is Disney essentially has created a policy that no kid can ever be seen crying around Mickey Mouse. And so they've got staff members around Mickey Mouse when he's out in front of the public, that when they see a kid crying, those people get in and, you know, and take care of the kid, and Mickey Mouse is out.
Yeah.
He's gone the other way. So you know, those kind of things. The mascot world is really amazing, and I've gotten to dive into it, so to speak, in the last few months, and it's been a pretty terrific ride.
Is you got your Marlins ring there?
I do. That's a paperweight, really.
Oh, it's a paperweight. The Cubs did that one.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, no, but I got the real one here.
Is there something wrong with me being so excited to be here, being here right now?
No, this is normal. This is what happens. This is what this building does to people.
It's very, very nice.
Despite whatever perception they might have had.
Everybody's before. Laughing outside.
Yeah. Listen, I tell you what. It's a place for adults to let their guard down, let their kids have fun, and it's truly a family environment.
Last thing, tell me a little about your background, and what'd you do with the Marlins, and, I mean, your background in museum work, and how you apply all that into what you're doing today.
I went to the University of Miami,
mm-hmm.
So I stayed local, I ran the school paper there.
Oh, you did?
I did.
What was the name of the paper?
The Hurricane.
Okay.
And that was sort of my first sales job, really? Selling ads. Equal to the editor-in-chief, John Santucci. I can't believe I remember that. And we ran the paper. He ran the editorial, and I ran the business side and the ads. And the two of us would go to the Miami Herald offices on Sunday night.
I know where
and
that,
we'd
yeah.
put it together, and it'd be out on Tuesday and Friday. I worked as an intern for Hurricane Athletics after I graduated. And that was the year we won the Rose Bowl against Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Undefeated season. Great team. Terrific team. And then a few months later, I got an opportunity to interview for a full-time sales job at the Marlins. And I got that job, and you know, essentially, I was given my cubicle, our price sheet, and if you want to make money, go sell tickets. If you are just happy being in sports and being in the show, don't mess anything up. And that was training. And so I had to train myself on how to do it. And thankfully, I was surrounded by so many great professionals that helped me figure out how to sell without making the 120 phone calls a day sort of thing. Building relationships, networking, going to chamber of commerce meetings and building relationships with my current clients to get referrals and that sort of thing. So I built a great career. And my claim to fame at the Marlins over 13 years is developing what to date is still, until somebody proves me wrong, and I dare somebody to, we conceptualized and developed, along with all my contacts at the University of Miami, the largest single organization group outing to a single game in United States professional sports history.
How many people are that?
24,000, just short of 24,000 people to one game from one organization, and I dare anybody to...
Where'd you go? What'd you do?
Well, so it was a long story, but essentially the University of Miami brought all their staff, and they let staff bring family to thank them for all the great work they do for the university.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it was an HR initiative, right?
Uh-huh.
And so we you know, essentially convinced them that it was the right idea to do it at the game, and we developed a 12 or 13 year, it might be 12 years, relationship, bringing, you know, those people to a game. And we fed them, and we did, essentially, it was a one-day sponsorship of the stadium, for the University of Miami.
Wow.
And it was terrific. And so from there, I went to the PGA Tour, who recruited me for a couple of years at the Cadillac Championship. They subsequently moved that tournament to Mexico, and I didn't want to go to Mexico. My wife's from Michigan, and that probably wouldn't have gone
really?
Well.
So she's happy about being here.
She, yeah, this is surreal to her. This is surreal. She's been in Florida for 10 years before this.
Yeah.
So she's like, I can't believe I'm back.
Part of
Midwest.
Michigan.
Lansing, Michigan. Yeah.
Lansing Lugnuts.
Yeah, that's right.
I wonder what their mascot. I don't know their mascot. I'm pretty good at my mascots.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll have to. Well, so there's
Midwest League has some good mascots. You gotta check out Mr. Shucks.
I'll write it
Mr.
down.
Shucks is really great.
So there's a game upstairs called Where Are They From?
Yeah. Okay.
Geography game, uh-huh. Right? And we have about 100 plus mascots, and literally it's a touch screen, and the mascot face comes up in three states, and it's your job to figure out what state he's from. And so I'll be interested to see how you do.
Right.
And then from there, from the PGA, I went to a civic museum in a town, in a suburb of Miami called Coral Gables.
Oh, yeah,
and that was Coral Gables Museum. And I was there for a little short of 2 years doing development and membership and biz development and that sort of thing. So, and then these guys came calling, and, you know, I've lived my entire life in the sun and by the beach and at the cruise port. And I can jump on a boat whenever I want. You know,
you're still by the water here.
The melting pot of...
How far are we from Lake Michigan?
Literally, a yeah. stone's throw.
Yeah, right.
A baseball's throw.
Yeah, right.
And it was too good of an opportunity to say no.
Were you at the new stadium? Or were you always at the...
Both.
You were okay, both. The reason I'm asking that is I was there. I went. You know, I'm a huge fan. And it was... this goes back to having fun in baseball. I think maybe they're taking away the red rooms thing. But I was one of the few people really liked...
It's already gone.
I really liked that. But they had the bobbleheads. I hope the bobbleheads remain. They have that big bobblehead collection.
You know, I think Mr. Loria, the previous...
He was an art guy, right?
He was an art dealer. Yeah, right. The previous owner of the Marlins, previous to Derek Jeter and his group and Sherman. I remember reading that he had donated that collection of bobbleheads to some organization.
Maybe a bobblehead museum just opened up in Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee, yeah. So maybe it went there. Maybe it went to the Baseball Hall of Fame. I don't know where.
Really?
That's what I heard. I can't confirm. I haven't been there.
Who did they belong to? Was that Loria's?
That was Loria's personal collection. Yeah. Right. But he had showcased it on this great, beautiful display.
Yeah. There's all glass.
All glass
and
clothes.
And
each of the shelves, they put a like a vibrator on the shelves. So the bobbleheads were shaking the entire time.
Yeah.
And, it was terrific. But I, if I remember correctly, I think I read that he had donated that before he sold the team.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Did we miss... I'm sure we missed something. You got to get to some Midwest League games. Ozzie the Cougar, he's pretty iconic.
Yeah.
There's all these wacky mascots. I'll leave you this book we did on the
Midwest appreciate
League,
it.
But,
Somebody
one time, some frat house... I mean, these all are all over the
world. Yeah, yeah,
somebody stole Ozzie the Cougar's head.
Yeah, and it was held
for ransom.
Yeah.
Stuff like that happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, you know what's neat is as I get more ingrained into the world of mascots here and get to know mascots and people and certainly the territory... So you're going to see, as I mentioned, Moonchester from Manchester City upstairs. He's going to come down, and we're going to install a nonprofit organization's mascot. So his name is Jetco, and he belongs to an organization called RARE, and they're an environmental sustainability organization that we're going to highlight their message and Jetco and what it means to the organization. And then when he comes down, probably sometime at the start of April, we're working on displaying what I believe sounds like the oldest high school mascot in the state of Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Felix the Cat. And we've been talking to the mayor of that town to bring him up and kind of highlight the that mascot's work at the high school and in the community.
What town is that?
Oh, man, you're going to... That's the one question I don't have an answer to.
For the print version, you can get...
I can get the answer. And... So we're going to highlight them and hopefully maybe, you know, have the town come up and celebrate, you know, that, you know, the original Felix the Cat.
That's great.
You know? So lots of great things here.
What'd your parents do?
My parents were retired.
Yeah.
They came to this country on an Eastern Airlines flight, or maybe Pan Am Airlines, November 1970 from Cuba.
Did they really? What part of Cuba?
And so my dad was from Santa Clara, from Havana, and my mom was from a region called Camagüey.
Uh-huh.
You know, we've got family, literally 90% of my family is still there, and mostly in a town called Jarahueca. And I have yet to go, one day I'll head out there. But they literally put, she was a seamstress, her entire career here until she retired. And my dad was a janitor for a food distribution warehouse in Miami.
And what are their names?
And Hissel. My dad is Hissel, G-I-S-E-L. And my mom is Isabel Hernandez. And, you know, struggling to put three boys through college. First generation, three boys. And now they're retired
good
in Florida.
And, good for them.
You know, yeah.
I'm sure baseball fans.
Marlins fans,
I went to the mid to late 80s. I did some stories for the Sun-Times.
Yeah, my mom's more a baseball fan than my dad, I think. You know, she gets into it, and she's got all the Marlins stuff, and they're so excited about this opportunity, and they're excited to come up and check it out one day.
Yeah, Victor Mesa, they just signed him as Victor Mesa.
Mesa. Yeah.
I saw his father play.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, no, listen, it's been a terrific ride. It's only been 2.5 months, but there's so many big things coming, and we're excited about what the summer months are going to bring with so many people in town. And then field trips. We have a great space upstairs for companies to hold events, and my singular focus is the grand opening and then showing the country what a mascot Hall of Fame induction ceremony is going to be like. So a little different than a typical induction ceremony, a little bit fun and quirky and silly, and it should be good.
And for radio, why don't you say here's the website for more information.
Sure. So for more information here about the Mascot Hall of Fame in Whiting, Indiana, you can check out our website, www.mascothalloffame.com. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/mascothalloffame, or follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Mascot Hall.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This has been great.
All right, thanks.